It is a great pleasure for me to be with you tonight. I thank all the organizers and especially Kanti for inviting me and getting me down here. And the Venerable Achan Brahm, whom I respect, and I really wish that such people, may the Devas protect, and may he live long, enjoy good health, to continue this wonderful service to the Dhamma. So with his blessings and his permission, I'd like to speak to you a little bit, some aspect of the Dhamma. At the end of it, I will give you question time, and you can, we can have a little discussion. So here the Buddha speaks of Katamancha Bhikkhave Dukkha Samudayam Arya Satcham. The Buddha is now asking, what is Dukkha Arya Satcha? What is the Dukkha Arya Satcha? That is the first noble truth. And then the Buddha asks, Katamancha Bhikkhave Dukkha Samudayam Arya Satcha? What is the second noble truth? What is the cause of dukkha? And we all know what is the third noble truth. That is the eradication of dukkha. And what is the fourth noble truth? The way leading to the eradication of dukkha. When I say dukkha, I think you will all understand it as suffering, or dukkha could mean unsatisfactoriness or suffering. But I think the word dukkha we can use, because we cannot say it, the translation, in such a exact manner. So we'll keep to the word dukkha. So here the Buddha tries to ask the monks, what is the cause of dukkha? Dukkha samudayam. Yayang tanha pono bhavika. The cause for dukkha is tanha, attachment. Tanha comes with its retinue. Tanha comes with ego, me, I, attachment, desire, pride, conceit, so many aspects of attachment. Attachment is desire, wanting, having, enjoying, all of it. So the Buddha asks, what is the cause of dukkha? And he says that this attachment is the cause of dukkha. When we were coming, we were discussing this point with the doctor, and he wanted to know why dukkha, we know, has an unpleasant feeling. But attachment, we know, desire, has a pleasant feeling. But attachment is also the cause of dukkha. It has a pleasant feeling even then. We must not confuse the two. One is dukkha, the first noble truth. The second noble truth is the cause of dukkha, which is attachment. But ironically, this attachment comes with a pleasant sensation. That is why people are attached. All aspects of attachment come with a pleasant sensation. So you cannot recognize it as dukkha. unless of course you know that it is not dukkha, but it is the cause of dukkha. The two are two different things. Dukkha is really the unsatisfactoriness. Attachment is not dukkha, but it is the cause of dukkha. So therefore it has to be dukkha also finally. So the Buddha says, what is it? Puno bhavika, that it will give rise to a punarbhava, is a rebirth. This attachment is conducive to getting a rebirth. Nandi raga sahagata, and it's always pleasant. Nandi means pleasant feeling. You enjoy here, there. Tatra tatra abhinandini, abhinandini, also pleasant enjoyment here, there, all over. All enjoyment is conducive to tanna. So now we are in a big problem, because all life is enjoyment and tanna. But we even don't know that this could be the cause for dukkha. We have to see that too clearly. Yesterday I think I was at the temple and we were speaking more or less on the same subject. Supposing you win a sweep ticket. You are very happy. You are not unhappy. But there's plenty of tanna, attachment, desire with the money and everything, what you can do with it. So in itself, it is happy. But it will lead to so much dukkha, because it would mean you maintaining, if you lose it, if you cannot, the use of it, all of it will entail tanna. Say you have the best Benz car. It is happy to have a Benz car. But to buy it, you have to spend so much money. And to spend so much money, you have to work for it. And to maintain the car is also difficult, because it's a very valuable car. It's on the road. You have to be very careful. And also if you lose it by some chance, it will be most difficult. So now, all good things are like that. They are difficult to get, difficult to maintain, and difficult to lose. Therefore it is a dukkha. So therefore it is conducive to dukkha. In itself it is a happy thing. So though it gives the happy feeling, it also means so much of dukkha underneath, the cause. So in that way we must see that the cause of dukkha is tanna, but it can be a happy sensation. So now what can we do with this? We want to have the happy sensation and yet not have tanna or attachment to it. So, in the case of the arahants and the Buddha, they always got happy feeling, nandi, raga, sagata, but not with attachment, not with karma formation. So we must be able to enjoy life without clinging and longing and desire and karmic involvement. All happy things we can understand. To see nice things, it's good. You have to do a lot of good karma to see nice things, to be born into this world, to be born into places where there is so much luxury. It is good feeling. If you were born into the slums of Africa, you will be most miserable, because you have to see all kinds of misery around. you'll be hungry all day. Then your feelings, your bodily feelings, the temperature, everything is so hard. So always through the environment you get unhappy feeling. But here you're very lucky. Everywhere you look, Australia is so beautiful. Nice things to see, nice things to hear, nice things to smell, nice tastes also, very good food, and the climate and everything is so comfortable. And now I was riding in the Benz car and I was thinking, what a pleasure to be riding in the Benz car. Now the problem is, if you are attached to it, that's another thing. Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana, these are the four aspects of the mind. Vedana is feeling, Sanya is perception or recognizing the feeling, Sankara is making karma, and Vijnana is this consciousness. All four aspects are there in our thinking. So, feeling can be nice, Vedana. Sanya, you can recognize it as good, it's a nice Benz car. You recognize it and you know you have a good feeling. But Sankara is the time you make karma. If I'm attached to it, then I get into difficulties. And consciousness is through my eye consciousness and my body consciousness, I get this feeling. So the idea is this, you can still have the luxuries but not be attached to it. If you are attached to it and you have desire and longing and pride and conceit associated with it, then it becomes bad karma. But in itself, the feeling we can enjoy without being attached to it. Now this you can do only if you are a little bit advanced in meditation. Because the two are very close. As soon as you get good feeling, you get attachment. So how to stop at the feeling stage, good feeling, and allow it to pass? Don't be attracted to it, don't be attached to it, don't be driven by it, don't be a victim to it, don't get make karma about having to own it or about greed and conceits and prides connected to it. These are the unwholesome states. The feeling itself is only a feeling. Feelings come and go. They come and go, they come and go. So if we are able to watch the feeling, happy feeling, coming and going, you have no more attachment. This is a difficult stage. But I think you have to understand it. I was just telling him the story of the forest monk and the town monk. This monk who lived in the town had a huge monastery and he was enjoying plenty of luxuries. But the forest monk, he lived in the jungle all day. They were good friends. One day the forest monk came and told him, his friend, you're wasting your time. You're wearing robes and you're living like a lay person, enjoying all the luxuries of this temple. That's not why you became ordained. Let's go to the jungle and do our meditation. He said, yes, I'm very ready. I will come. So on the appointed day, the jungle monk came, the forest monk came, but he had quite a big bundle of things necessary for the forest. But this town monk, he only had his bowl and robes. And he also walked out to go to the jungle. And then this monk asked, why, where are your things? said, what things? Why, all these things you have in your temple? Ah, no, no, I was only looking after them. I don't need any of it. Now you can see the two monks, which of them had more attachment, the forest monk or the town monk? Which one? Yeah? More attachment? The forest monk, he had more things to look after. So, it looks like that. You can still have the luxuries and not be attached. You still have all the happy now, Venerable Achan Brahm has such a beautiful place. But I don't think he's attached. Any moment he can walk out of the place. So, this is what we must practice. It's this attachment that is conducive to bad karma. We must be ready to leave it any day, any moment, knowing the Dhamma, knowing the nature of samsara, knowing the nature of impermanence, knowing the nature of dukkha, knowing the nature of that non-ego situation, nothing belongs. So we must be able to leave it and go in a moment, bye, we are going. So that's the kind of attitude we must have towards all life and living, because nothing belongs. They are so transitory. Then we can take that shot. If you don't do that, at the last moment, you cannot leave the place, you cannot leave your house, you cannot leave your children, you cannot leave the luxuries. You are so attached to them. So when you are in the Dhamma, you can still enjoy and not develop so much pride, conceit, attachment, ego, and all those desire and that kind of mental karmic formation. For this, you have to be always vigilant in your mind about how you think, how you speak, and how you act. Now I am going to explain to you a little bit how does attachment arise. Isn't that interesting? The Buddha has said many, many ways how attachment, desire arises in the mind. Sakopana panesa bhikkhave tanna katta upajjamana upajjati. How does tanna or attachment arise? Chakkum loke piyarupan satarupan ette sa tanna upajjamana upajjati. Chakkum is the eye. Eye is a object which is so valuable to us, and because of the eye, attachment arises. If you lose your eye, you will be most miserable. Why? There is so much attachment to the eye. So, eye is something that raises, that can produce attachment. Sotam loke, the ear, is so precious to us, more precious than the biggest luxury you have. So if you lose the ear, the sense of hearing, then you will be most unhappy. So therefore, ear is also a source of desire. Then the nose, piya rupan sata rupan, it is always, you associate it with me and I, and it is indispensable. You cannot do without. Therefore, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, touch, and the mind itself, memory. If you lose your memory, you know how unhappy you will be. If you lose your sense of taste, sense of smell, sense of touch, how extremely unhappy you will be. So therefore, all these are sources which are conducive to the arising of attachment. When you know what they are, then you know how to deal with them. And then the Buddha says, Rupang loke piya rupang sata rupang ette satanna uppajjamana uppajjati. Then again, the eye objects, the things of the world, visual objects, if they are pleasing, they also raise attachment or desire in your mind. Not only that, saddha loke piya rupam, sounds that are pleasing, which you like to hear again and again, people speaking well of you, speaking kind words, you again and again have a desire for it, to hear them again and again. So you crave for the sound. Therefore the Buddha says sound is also a source where desire can arise. Similarly, smell, smells of the world, nice smell, very pleasing, pleasant smells. You can enjoy it again and again. Good smell of food. Today we had Sri Lanka food. So something that you really like, smell. Smell also can produce attachment. This we must know. Then only we know how not to get attached. Taste, food that you like to taste, your best dish, this taste also can produce attachment. The food itself. Rupa, saddha, gandha, rasa, pottabha, that is the touch. When the touch is pleasing, the temperature around, and it's someone who is whom you like, then the pleasant touch. All, so that is, you like to have it again and again. Therefore, attachment can arise due to touch. Then, thinking also, dhamma loke, thinking good things, thinking of the nice time we have had, again and again. Just remembering and thinking about the good things of the past, present or future can raise attachment in the mind. So now we know how this attachment arises throughout the day without our even knowing it. So when you meditate, this is an important thing for you to contemplate on, how attachment arises in various ways. Then the Buddha says, Chakku vinyanam loke piya rupam sata rupam. Chakku vinyana is the consciousness of the eye consciousness. Also is very pleasing. When the outside object is pleasing, the chakku vinyana, the consciousness, also becomes a part of our sight. Therefore, without the consciousness, eye consciousness, you cannot see. Therefore, that eye consciousness is also liable to produce desire. If there is no eye consciousness, you are blind. Similarly, the ear consciousness. If there is no ear consciousness, you are deaf. Similarly, the nose consciousness and the tongue consciousness and the body consciousness. If you lose body consciousness, there is no desire. It's very, very, very distressing. So this body consciousness and also mind, mental consciousness, thinking about things. If you cannot think, then also it will be very distressing. But so long as they are there, you are attached to that. Therefore, eye consciousness and ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness and the mind consciousness are also things which we value so much and which can produce attachment. So in this way the Buddha has shown many, many ways. Then the Buddha says, Chakku sampasaja vedana loke piya rupan sata rupan itte satanna upajamana. Because of the eye and seeing a good thing, you get a pleasant sensation. That sensation is also conducive to the production of attachment. Because of the eye consciousness, the vedana or the sensation, the feeling that arises, the pleasant feeling through eye is also producing attachment. Then sota sampasaja vedana, the consciousness of the ear hearing of pleasant sounds produces feeling, happy feeling, and that also makes you into attachment. Happy feeling coming through the eye, coming through contact with the ear, happy feeling coming through the sensation of some smell, can make you get into states of desire. And happy feeling coming through the sense of taste also can be conducive to the arising of desire. And happy sensations or feelings coming through touch of the body is also conducive to the arising of attachment. And the happy sensation coming through your memory of the past or the future or present, of things which you were enjoying in the past or in the future or in the present, so just thinking about it in your mind, again desire can arise. So there are many ways. And again the Buddha says, Rupa sanya loke piya rupan sata rupan itte satanna upajamana upajati. Recognizing a good thing through the eye, rupa sanya is the recognition of some visual object. That also is conducive to the production of desire. Or sabda sanya, hearing some voice or sound that is pleasant, also, and recognizing that sound as so and so or what it is. That day I heard the Beethoven sonata, so I was happy because after a long time in Adelaide, Tara was playing that. So hearing something beautiful, something which you like, or somebody whose voice you like, so recognizing it. Sanya is recognition. Recognizing the sound also can be conducive to attachment. Recognizing the smell also can be conducive. Recognizing the smell of that particular food or that particular thing you like, that is the sanya. Sanya is recognition, perception, and that also can be conducive to arising of desire. And recognizing the taste, this is that taste that I like. This is the connoisseur's art. This is that brand that I like. This is that special taste. There again the desire can arise due to the recognition of the taste and the recognition of that touch. This touch is such and such, and you come to recognize, and then again, so, and also memory. Through memory you recognize, I had this time with such and such person, and in your mind you conjure up, and then again you get this attachment can arise. In this way the Buddha speaks many more things also. I will just go through it. Rupa sanchetana loke. Chetana. What is Chetana? Is Sankara. Chetana is Sankara. Chetana is karma. The very attachment to it also is a cause for further attachment. Rupa Sanchetana, coming from the I, the attachment itself is another attachment, is conducive to the tanna itself is a cause for further tanna. So the attachment coming through the ear can be the cause for further tanna. So the attachment itself, the sankara, the sanchetana, is a cause for further attachment. So it can come through the eye, ear, nose. The attachment you have created through your nose consciousness for good smell is a cause for further attachment. And the attachment you create through the tongue for taste is a cause for further attachment. And the attachment you create for your touch and through your mind, all these, the attachment itself is another cause. So in this way, the Buddha says, there are many, many, and also some more, Rupa Vicharo Loke, talking about it, contemplating about it. Vichara means talking and going over it again and again. You think of that attachment again and again. Then also it is conducive to further attachment. And Rupa Vitakko Loke, and finding out how much it is, how good, how maybe say you are thinking of a woman or man, how he walks, how he talks, and you contemplate in your mind, and then again it is conducive to attachment. So in this way, we are not even knowing how much we are immersed in this problem of attachment. And then if it's in the mind, we can eradicate it by being mindful, by being conscious of it. Now in my mind there is attachment. If you are able to understand your mind state and recognize it as attachment, then you have won the case. Then you can overcome it. Otherwise, you become a victim to it. And the attachment will overpower you. So in meditation, what we do is we become very mindful of our thinking and recognizing our mind states. So when we know there is attachment, we must know it as attachment. Now I'm only talking about this attachment. But frequently it is difficult to recognize this because all these attachments come with pleasant sensation and you live with it. You can live a whole life with it without even recognizing it as a form of unwholesome thinking. Because it gives you a pleasant feeling. So, if it is an unpleasant feeling coming through this eye, ear and all these things, then it is easier to recognize because it has an unpleasant feeling. You don't like to live with it. You like to get rid of it. So therefore, anger is easier to get rid of than attachment. Attachment is more deep-seated, and it is called the friendly enemy. So it is so friendly because it comes with happiness. So you like to enjoy it. You can live with it. And you even don't know it is your enemy. You go into it. And you are consumed by it. And at the last moment when you lose it only, you get frustrated. Because you even didn't know you had attachment for it. But if you know there is attachment, then you know how to avoid getting mixed up with it. And then If only you know it, you are wise with it. If you don't know it, you are ignorant about it. What you don't know, you are ignorant about. So it is better for you to know it. These are the pitfalls. These are the things that consume us. Then when you know it, you use it very judiciously, as far as such things are necessary. And you don't get consumed by it. So you can yet go in your Benz car without being attached to it and thinking it is me and I and mine, and getting too much involved, knowing that any time I can be dispossessed of it. Any time I can be dispossessed of my eye and ear, there's some sickness and you have to cut one of your limbs also. What to do? And anyway, for sure, with old age, you have to be dispossessed of all the luxuries. You can't maintain them anymore. Even while your lifetime, sure to be dispossessed of all the good things. And in death, surely, yes, we have to leave everything and go. Therefore, these are things for us to contemplate and to practice, understanding again and again. So you know the gravity of it, you know the depth of it, you know the intensity of it. So you live with it, knowing it with wisdom. If you don't know it, you are in ignorance and delusion. And you think it is me, I, mine, and the prides and conceits with it. And we can see the war working so much damage. Me, I, mine, conceits and prides and domination and all that kind of thing. Because you never understand this karmic implication of tanha. When you know it, you know how far to go with it, and how much to go with it, and how safe, and whether it is your territory or whether it is beyond your territory. So within your territory, you have worked hard, you have got your car, you still can enjoy it. But if you like to rob and steal somebody else's car, that's also attachment in a big way. So within your family, within your income, within your worldly possessions, in a respectable way, you can just enjoy it, but knowing very well, sooner or later, we will be dispossessed of everything. So in that way, meditation and contemplation and understanding this dukkha, the cause of dukkha, is very helpful to our daily living, and also to give up our unnecessary attachments for the self, the ego, and also you have luxuries as much as it is necessary, and you know their limitations, then you enjoy them without clinging and longing. So the Buddha speaks of this second noble truth, which is the cause of dukkha. Because by itself they give you pleasant feeling, but they are the cause for all the dukkha in the world. Isn't it dukkha for us to maintain the body? To maintain the car, maintain the houses, so much of money to earn. So all luxuries have this problem. Difficult to get, difficult to maintain, and difficult to lose. You know how it is difficult for us to lose a limb or eye, or to lose our memory or our body. So all these things that are pleasant are also conducive to immense suffering. So that's what the Buddha meant in his second noble truth, which is dukkha. First is dukkha, second is the cause of dukkha. Cause of dukkha is tanha or attachment. It is pleasant by itself, but is the cause for which we are working morning, noon and night to satisfy our senses. And it is hard work and it is dukkha. So maybe I will give you question time, because it is rather difficult for people to understand this. Where's the time? I wonder what time it is. And how much... Yeah. Then we'll give you question time. What time is it now? Seven twenty. We have 10 minutes more. We'll give you question time.
Is mindfulness enough to
Very good question. Is mindfulness enough to overcome attachment? Surely not enough. Unless you are really a practiced, developed meditator. For a very developed meditator, mindfulness and recognition of attachment is enough. You just give it up, throw it. But for others, it is not enough. So sometimes you are having my attachment. Then you must be able to understand the impermanence of it. This attachment, this pleasant feeling, how impermanent it is. It comes and goes, it comes and goes. So why should you be attached to it? Just think of it, how much of pleasant feeling you may have had in the past. Can you even count? Where are those now? They have come and gone, they have come and gone. They never stay. So think in terms of impermanence. All happy feelings, they come and go. No use getting attached to them. In the future also, it will come and go. It will never stay. So, when you see impermanence, that is wisdom. When you see with wisdom, then wisdom and mindfulness, you can make a two-pronged attack and overcome states of desire and attachment. So you can always use wisdom of impermanence or wisdom of non-ego, anatta, nothing belongs. So I cannot maintain these happy feelings as much as I like, because they are conditioned. So long as the conditions are there, I get happy feelings. But if the conditions change, I don't get any more happy feelings. So that is understanding the anatta, the non-self nature of all feelings. Then understanding the sorrow-laden nature, in the sense that it is so difficult to get it, it is so difficult to lose it, and so painful to maintain it. That is the sorrowful nature. So in that way, we make use of wisdom also to combat this attachment. Not only be mindful. We have mindfulness and wisdom. Yesterday I was telling how to use not only water to wash your hand, but sometimes if there is grease and oil, you need soap also. So this detergent is like wisdom. Mindfulness is like water. You can sometimes get through with mindfulness and nearly get out of it. Sometimes you cannot. Then you have to use your wisdom. And understand, what is this? Am I attached to this? Is a transitory thing. This is a non-self. I cannot get it when I want it. It is conditioned. And this is dukkha in the making. Then you make use of wisdom. That is like your detergent. or you can make use of the Four Noble Truths. This is dukkha, this is the cause of dukkha. As long as I hold on to it, it will produce this dukkha. So therefore I make an effort to reduce that attachment. When you reduce that attachment, the dukkha, the result will automatically disappear. That's also one way of combating it, with wisdom. And also you can think in terms of kusala and akusala. When you have attachment, you must understand it is a state of akusala, unwholesome state. And that because of the unwholesome state, you are driven to rebirth in samsara, pono bhavika. And then so much misery it will entail. Therefore the wisdom of wholesome and unwholesome karma is also useful along with mindfulness to overcome states of things. So in this way we can make use of wisdom and mindfulness to overcome states of any state of any defilement in the mind. It can be anger. The same thing holds for anger and all other defilements. Any other questions?
Is renunciation is renunciation a part of that practice?
I want to know the question. Please. Can you come here and ask me? To give up tanha, you practice renunciation. My, that's very good if you can. That's the best thing you can do. Renounce. But most of us cannot renounce. We are living in the world. We have to live with our families. We have to live with our houses. We have to live with our cars and we have to live with our comforts. We cannot renounce. We cannot give up like that. But you can still make an effort not to be attached to it. So you can still enjoy it without getting attached. If you can renounce, so much the better, like me. this is very funny also. When I renounced my family and house, I thought I will have to get onto the streets. I even don't have any money, but people are giving me all kinds of things. The more I renounce, when I renounce my children, I find all of you are my children everywhere in the world and they are looking after me. This is very funny with renouncing. The more you give up, the more you get. I don't have a car, but people are taking me in big cars around. I haven't anything. The more I renounce, maybe that is a natural sequence which is difficult to understand but true. I don't have houses, but they are giving me very nice places. They are best rooms I am getting. I don't have a place of my own. I have renounced. But this is the effects of renunciation. This is the effect of giving up tanha, giving up. The more you give up, the more you get. It is funny but true. Okay.
Can you stay in lay life every now? Huh?
Yeah. I don't get the question, darling. Can you stay in lay life and renounce? Yes, the way I'm telling you. Enjoy everything, don't get attached. Don't expect returns. Have metta. Have metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. For everybody. That is renouncing. You do everything for others and then you don't expect returns. If you get it, you like it. Otherwise, you are not wanting it. That's the way to renounce in lay life. Have plenty of metta. So when you get the good thing also, you are happy. When they scold you also, you are not unhappy. So, for you have equanimity, and then you are willing to forgive all the wrongdoers. That is renouncing. Because you have no attachment, therefore you have only metta. Metta and attachment are very similar, but one is wholesome, one is unwholesome. In metta, you do everything and you don't expect returns. But in attachment, you do something and you expect returns. If you don't get returns, you are unhappy. You expect the caste to stay like that. When the car is broken, you are unhappy. You expect the house to stay so nice. When it is not nice, then you are unhappy. You expect the husband to behave like that, and then he doesn't behave, then you are unhappy. You expect the wife to perform like this, and when they don't perform, you are unhappy. This is what attachment is. That is the worldly way. But metta is not like that. You do everything for your wife, you don't expect returns. But you do it all the same. So you do your duties with happiness, and all the goodness, with the highest happiness you do it, without expecting returns. That is metta. So that way you can renounce and not have tanna. So don't cultivate tanna, cultivate metta. Metta is to do everything, have a nice house, have a house, have everything, have your children. Always be happy with them and treat them with metta, loving kindness, not tanna. Tanna will get you angry in a moment. If you expect returns, you don't get, then you are angry. So the two are very different. If ever you get angry, remember, I have tanna, that's why I get angry. You see, when your child is misbehaving, you get angry. When somebody else's child is misbehaving, you don't get angry. Why? You have tanha for this child, because he's my child, so he must behave properly. Others, if it was your enemy or somebody you don't like, then you will even say, never mind, good for him. You see? This tanha is the thing that makes you angry. If there is no tanha, no anger. So develop metta, because you don't expect any returns after that. You just do it. Be happy with everybody, everywhere, all the time. Metta is the thing, compassion. And for the war, we must have, today my David was asking me, he was very distressed about the war. And I said, why are you angry with them? You have to be very compassionate. After all, they are suffering people. They are hell-bound people. These people who perpetrate war, those who go and fight and kill, they are hell-bound. They are suffering now, and they will die and be born in misery. So you shouldn't get angry with them. They are already punished. We never punish suffering people. We just be compassionate. Be very compassionate when you see all the misery in the world. What karma they make. What unhappiness now and in the future. They even don't know. This karma is a thing which we can't see or hear or smell or taste or touch. So therefore we cannot think about it. Therefore we are ignorant about it. But it doesn't mean that it is not there. You have to be very enlightened to understand the implications of karma. But that doesn't mean that it is not there. It is there very much, whether we believe it or not. Okay. So, when you see all the warp, torn and all that misery, be very sorry for them, compassion for them. What karma they are making and what results they have to face. And then when we see people like you, how happy we are. What good karma you are making and what a good life you have in front of you. You are making the best of your human life and you are raising yourself to divine levels and to Nibbana. And these people getting worse than animals and subhuman level. Even animals cannot kill so many. So they are worse than that also, and they are hell-bound. So you have to be very sorry for them, compassion for them. And for you we have altruistic joy. How happy you have made use of your human rebirth to the best of your ability. And you are making your way for the heaven and for Nibbana. So all that we develop is altruistic joy for you and compassion for them. And again we have no more anger for anybody, no more jealousy for anybody. And we are not jealous for you that you are doing so well. Neither are we angry with them for doing so badly. We only develop compassion for them and altruistic joy for us, for you. And they are all wholesome states. Okay? Sure. When we see other people doing the wrong thing and I get angry, what is my situation? Others are doing the wrong thing and I am getting angry and I am punishing myself, making bad karma for myself, and I am suffering now and in the future. And all the time, it's somebody else who is doing the wrong thing. Why do you want to go and sacrifice your happiness? So if others are doing the wrong thing, it is they that have to carry that burden of their wrongdoing. I don't have to carry it. If you do bad karma, I am not suffering. If I do bad karma, I should be very sorry and I should be suffering with it. I don't have to suffer when others are doing bad karma. I have to feel sorry for them. They don't know. Therefore they are doing it. I feel sorry for them. I feel compassionate for them. Okay? So in this world it is best for you to see the good in other people and not see the bad in other people. Whenever you see the bad, again and again you raise anger in your heart. For what? You punish yourself. Okay? So that's a very good reason for us to see only the good in other people. Also, it needs intelligence to see the good in other people. It doesn't need any intelligence to see the bad. Because you see the bad with anger. So anger is unwholesome. And it comes naturally. To see the good, you have to have altruistic joy. And that is difficult, you have to develop it. It is a wholesome state. So easy thing is to find fault with others. Difficult thing is to see the good in others and appreciate the good and compliment it and allow it to grow and support it. That is difficult. You can always scold somebody and just be indifferent to it. It's all akusala for you to do that. But it is kusala for you to see the good and allow and support the good and compliment and help that good to grow. Then only the good will grow in the world. But if you find fault, you destroy yourself and you destroy others. Okay. Shall we stop? Okay. So I thank you very much for being here with me and allowing me this precious moment to speak to you the Dhamma, the sublime Dhamma of the Buddha. And I congratulate you and also wish that you in Australia are very fortunate. There are many, many very learned monks and teachers, and I hope you will grow in the Dhamma day by day, do more meditation and more living the Dhamma for your sake, and soon get rid of this round of rebirth. And may you be all enlightened, and that's my wish for you. Thank you. And we will share the merit with the divine beings. Akasatta ca bhummatta devanaga mahittika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu loka sasanam. Akasatta ca bhummatta devanaga mahittika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasatta ca bhummatta devanaga mahittika Punyantan anumoditva chiram rakkantu mam paranti. Idangvo nyati nangotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idangvo nyati nangotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idangvo nyati nangotu sukita hontu nyatayo. So, ever since now the last 1 hour, we have been here and our thoughts were full of non-hate, non-greed and wisdom. And we have made innumerable, infinite good karma. So we share this karma with the divine beings and our dear departed relations. And we wish you also success and happiness and growth in the Dhamma. Thank you very much. Abhivadana silis nicchang vadda pachayino chattaro dhamma vaddanti ayuvanno sukambalam ayurarogya sampatti sagga sampatti mevacha ato nibbana sampatti iminate samenjatu.